Okay, let's unpack this. This time of year, we're all surrounded by new gadgets,
Oh,
right?
absolutely.
Maybe you're setting up a smart speaker or just trying to figure out why that really highly anticipated piece of kit is already, glitching. But today, we are taking a deep dive into the absolute opposite of
Oh,
that.
you are.
We're celebrating the most spectacular, hilarious, and sometimes dangerous tech flops in history.
And it's not just for entertainment, it's essential learning for you, the consumer. Every functional piece of tech we use today really stands on the shoulders of 10 truly colossal, expensive failures.
That's a good way to put it.
And we've synthesized sources cataloging these huge stumbles from giants we all thought were infallible, Apple, Google, Nintendo, Samsung.
So our mission here is to extract the painful lessons from all this. What happens when innovation runs, well, way ahead of what consumers actually need?
Or basic common sense.
Or just competent engineering, yeah.
Yeah.
The stakes are just priceless, and they remind us that even the titans can stumble pretty dramatically.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, these failures aren't just technical.
Right.
They're often these fundamental miscalculations in marketing and the business models, or sometimes just a staggering inability to understand basic user ergonomics.
Exactly. So we're going to walk through the spectacular failures that remind us that even a $100 million venture can sometimes result in, well, a Wi-Fi connected paperweight.
Oh, right.
Let's start with pure, unadulterated absurdity. We have to begin with the KF console from 2020.
Oh, this one.
This is where the world, I think, is truly tilted on its axis. The pandemic was raging, and then KFC Kentucky Fried Chicken drops a cinematic trailer for a gaming PC.
The disbelief was just, you could feel it.
Everyone thought it was a joke.
Of course, I mean, it's a fried chicken brand, but then they doubled down. Cooler Master, the hardware manufacturer, confirmed they were actually building this thing.
And it wasn't some, joke build either. It was a serious machine.
It had real specs.
An Intel NUC9 Extreme, an ASUS RTX card. It was capable of 4K gaming at 240 frames per second.
High-end stuff.
Totally. But none of that mattered because the entire design focused on the one feature that literally no one asked for.
The thermal optimization feature?
The patented chicken chamber.
Yes. They realize the GPU generates a massive amount of waste heat, which is normal, but instead of just venting it, they engineered this drawer.
A drawer built into the case that channeled the heat directly to keep two pieces of fried chicken warm while you played a game.
It's just.
And the design brief must have started with the question, how do we make our high-performance computer smell like a deep fryer?
It's the classic, we were so preoccupied with whether we could, we didn't stop to think if we should.
That's it, exactly.
And beyond the comedy, for any serious PC builder, the thought of chicken grease interacting with high-speed fans and delicate components.
It's a nightmare.
It is a maintenance nightmare just waiting to happen. It was a $2,000 solution to a $0 problem.
Well, that sets the bar for absurdity pretty high.
It does.
But if the KF console was an engineering joke, Juicero, back in 2016, was a genuine monument to Silicon Valley hubris. This is the undisputed king of useless gadgets.
And this is a failure that's really rooted in investment frenzy, not physics. Juicero managed to raise a staggering amount of money.
How much was it again?
$120 million from serious investors, too. Google Ventures, Kleiner Perkins. They pitched it as the Keurig for cold-pressed juice.
And the execution was just bafflingly complex. You bought this $400 machine.
Originally 700.
Right, originally 700, which needed a Wi-Fi connection. Then you had to buy these proprietary subscription-based packets of, pre-chopped fruit and veg.
And this is the kicker.
Yeah, go on.
The machine had to scan a QR code on the packet, connect to the internet, and verify the packet was still fresh and authorized.
Digital rights management for juice.
That's the crucial insight into the whole investment bubble, isn't it? The appeal wasn't the juice, it was the proprietary ecosystem, the recurring revenue.
And the data.
And the data they could collect, they were solving a non-existent problem with layers of expensive, restrictive tech.
And the collapse was instantaneous, all thanks to a single Bloomberg video.
Oh, it was brutal.
Reporters discovered that the industrial-grade press was completely, utterly unnecessary.
They just filmed a reporter taking one of the Juicero packets, ripping it open, and just squeezing the juice out with their bare hands right into a glass.
And it took less time. No $400 machine, no Wi-Fi, no subscription.
Yeah.
The core value proposition was proven false in like 10 seconds of video.
It really was.
It just perfectly synthesized that whole critique of startups providing these overly complex solutions for things a human hand can do just fine.
Yep.
Okay, shifting to gaming. Nintendo is generally rock solid, right?
Oh, for sure.
They gave us the Game Boy, the Wii, the Switch. But even they had a spectacular high-profile miss, the Virtual Boy, 1995.
A very, very painful memory for those of us who suffered through it. It was marketed as the first portable 3D console championed by Gunpei Yokoi.
The genius behind the Game Boy.
The very same.
But calling it portable was a huge stretch.
A massive stretch.
It wasn't a headset you wore. It was this heavy, clunky device on a fragile little tripod stand. You'd hunch over it on a table like a mad scientist.
And it wasn't even true VR. It used an array of oscillating mirrors to create a parallax effect, just the illusion of depth. The problem wasn't the tech, really. It was the extreme cost cutting.
And that gave us the infamous Red Nightmare. To save money, Nintendo only used red LEDs because they were cheaper and used less power than, you know, full-color displays.
And the result was just harsh. Piercing black and red graphics that looked like a 1950s propaganda poster. Not a fun video game.
And the results were immediate and medically concerning.
Oh, yeah. Users complained of severe eye strain, debilitating neck pain from hunching over, nausea, migraines. The health warnings on the box were longer than the manual.
And the ultimate admission of failure was the auto-pause feature they had to build in. It literally forced the game to stop every 15 minutes, not for story reasons, but to give you a mandatory break.
To save your retinas.
To save your retinas. When your tech automatically forces the user to stop using it for safety, you know the design is fundamentally flawed.
So if Nintendo's failure was design oversight and fatal cost-cutting, Apple's console failure was a pure, catastrophic pricing sin.
Right.
So now we shift to the Apple Pippin from 1996. This was during the company's dark age.
So Apple partnered with Bandai, the huge Japanese toy company,
trying
to jump into the console market alongside the PlayStation and the N64.
Mm-hmm.
The Pippin was built on a stripped-down Macintosh classic architecture. It was running a really slow, clunky version of macOS.
And the issue wasn't really the technology, which was capable but just not optimized. The killer was the price point.
Yeah, the price. When you consider the benchmarks, the Sony PlayStation was $299.
$299.
The upcoming Nintendo 64 was $199. The Apple Pippin launched at a jaw-dropping $599.
That decision was just fatal. It was priced like a premium computer, but it didn't have the functionality to do any serious work.
Right, no productivity software.
But it was double or triple the price of its gaming competitors. It got stuck in this completely useless middle ground.
Too expensive for a console, too weak for a Mac.
Exactly.
It sold less than 42,000 units worldwide. The source material notes this was one of the first projects Steve Jobs mercilessly killed when he came back to Apple.
A foundational lesson. You can build something that's technically adequate, but if you completely misread the consumer's wallet, you will fail.
Okay, so the early 2000s belonged to Nokia. They were dominating mobile phones.
They were everywhere.
And they decided the next frontier was merging a phone and a Game Boy Advance into the Nokia N-Gage, 2003. A noble goal, but the execution was disastrous.
This created an immediate visceral user problem, and it was all about terrible ergonomics. The designers prioritized the form factor over the function.
Which is always a recipe for ridicule.
Always.
So they put the screen in the middle, controls on the side, which is fine for gaming, but the microphone and the speaker, they placed them on the top edge of the device.
So when you got a phone call, you had to hold the flat, long side of the device like a rectangular brick. Or, famously, a taco against your ear.
It looked ridiculous.
It did, and it became an instant cultural phenomenon. The taco phone meme. There are entire websites just for pictures of people holding, like, bananas and sandwiches to their ears to mock it.
The comedy was only half the problem, though.
Yeah.
The engineering was actively user hostile.
Mm.
Especially for its main purpose as a gaming device.
To change a game cartridge, you had to turn the phone off.
Off.
Then physically remove the back cover, then remove the battery.
The battery.
To swap the little game card. Replace everything, then wait 60 seconds for the whole thing to reboot.
Think about that. Every time you wanted to switch from, say, Tomb Raider to Sonic, it was a multi-step surgical procedure. It was punishing the user for daring to use the device as intended.
It just shows a profound disconnect. If they had used the device themselves for 1 week, this flaw would have been obvious.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of user hostile design that goes beyond just annoyance,
Yeah.
we have to talk about the Samsung Galaxy Note 7,
From 2016.
a failure that was catastrophic because it was a genuine physical risk.
This phone was hailed as the best of the year when it launched. But soon after, the reports started coming in. The batteries were suffering thermal runaway.
And thermal runaway is a critical term. It means the battery cells are generating heat faster than they can dissipate it. It leads to an uncontrolled, self-perpetuating chain reaction.
A fire or an explosion.
Exactly. It was traced to a manufacturing defect where the electrodes were squeezed too tightly, causing internal shorts.
The real-world chaos was unprecedented. Devices started exploding everywhere, in homes, in cars, even injuring people.
And the FAA and airlines worldwide banned the device outright.
You couldn't just turn it off on a flight. You couldn't even charge it.
Yeah.
Flight attendants had these specific urgent announcements.
I remember those. If you have a Galaxy Note 7, turn it off immediately and do not charge it while on board.
The sheer logistics of the global recall were immense.
Well, you couldn't just ship it. Shipping a potential fire hazard was classified as illegal.
So Samsung had to send customers these specialized fireproof return boxes.
They were lined with ceramic fiber. They even included gloves for you to handle the device safely.
So if you received one of those fireproof boxes for Christmas that year, you knew your high-tech gift had officially become a liability.
A serious one.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. We move into the modern era, where the failure wasn't the physical hardware, but the business model. The total erosion of consumer trust.
Google Stadia.
Google Stadia, launched in 2019, promised to kill the console. The future is the cloud, they said.
And this is the most complex failure we've talked about because technically the hardware and the network aspects, they mostly worked.
The latency was okay, right?
Yeah, latency was manageable, streaming quality was decent, but the business model immediately alienated the core gaming audience.
It was the greedy model that poisoned the well. Customers had to pay a monthly subscription for the premium service and buy the games at full price.
$60 a pop, just like on a PlayStation or Xbox.
And that just clashes directly with the trend of services like Xbox Game Pass, which offers hundreds of games for a flat fee.
Right. Google was asking users to accept the drawbacks of streaming like not owning anything while still paying the premium price of ownership.
And the gamer's fear was completely rational. Why should I buy a $60 digital license on a platform that Google has historically shown zero long-term commitment to?
Exactly. They feared if Google lost interest, they'd lose access to all their purchases.
And their fears were justified.
Completely justified. Google's graveyard of abandoned products is legendary, and Stadia was added to it in January 2023. They just pulled the plug.
Instantly killing access to the entire game library. Those expensive custom-built Stadia controllers basically became high-tech paperweights overnight.
It just illustrates a core issue in cloud gaming. If the platform owner decides to quit, your entire library just vanishes.
Thankfully, Google eventually pushed a Bluetooth update to save the controllers, but the trust was just permanently shattered.
Right. If you gifted Stadia to someone in 2019, you weren't giving them a console. You were giving them a high-tech rental service that Google decided to evict 3 years later.
It really highlights that in the digital age, a company's commitment to the product is just as valuable as the tech itself.
What's fascinating here is looking at the common threads that link the failure of a 1995 console to a 2019 cloud service.
Well, it's all connected.
We've seen fatal cost cutting with the Virtual Boy's red LEDs, pure hubris driving the investment in Juicero, and that catastrophic misreading of the market that killed the Pippin.
And we've progressed from inconvenient design, like the N-Gage, to actual physical danger with the Note 7, right up to this modern issue of a fundamental lack of trust, which is what destroyed Stadia.
And this teaches you, the learner, a huge lesson about being an early adopter. Sometimes the sleekest, most innovative solution is actually the biggest risk.
Because you're investing in an unproven business model.
Or an untested design that might only be useful to the designers themselves.
It raises an important question. In a world of infinite gadgets, how do you learn to discern the genuinely useful innovations from the over-engineered disasters?
By applying critical consumption and recognizing unnecessary complexity, technology doesn't fail because it isn't advanced enough. It often fails because it's too user-hostile, too expensive, or the creators just haven't grasped the simple question of who is this actually for?
The failure of the KF console, the N-Gage, the Note 7, They're all just cautionary tales wrapped in these really entertaining anecdotes. The synthesis is clear. The most successful technology just vanishes into the background of your life.
And the most disastrous demands your constant attention, your money, or in one case, a mandatory fireproof box.
We'll leave you with this final provocative thought, building on the source material's simple conclusion. Be grateful for the simple, low-tech gifts you might have received. At least your socks don't require a firmware update to keep your feet warm. At least your favorite sweater doesn't need to connect to Wi-Fi. And most importantly, none of those low-tech gifts require a fireproof box to ship them back when they spontaneously combust.
Choose your gadgets wisely. The world of tech is a minefield of trial and error, and as we've seen, the giants make the biggest bangs.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the glittering, often dangerous world of technological flops. We'll see you next time.